Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 71, Persian Endearment. Sunday, March 8th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Cha Yuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This episode features the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, off the shelf, and double happiness. I'd like to welcome Laura Knitz, PA, a Pennsylvania resident who got back into knitting about 4 years ago. And I'd like to welcome Gretchen, who is Pop Silly on Ravelry and is my Soulful Stash swap partner. Welcome, Gretchen. The back porch. In February, I completed a sweater. It has been my goal to complete a sweater in the month of February. This was the second year that I went on such a journey. I selected the Drape Front sweater. It's a pattern by Roberta Rosenfeld, and it's one of a collection of easy sweaters from Vogue. Most of those sweaters are done in a bulky weight yarn, and this pattern was no exception. But I did read some notes on Ravelry pointing out that you could get a nice effect and a little bit more flattering drape in the sweater by using a lighter weight yarn. I swatched very carefully for this sweater using US size 6 and size 7 needles. I liked the fabric made by the US size 6 needles much better. It was a little tighter. My stitches looked more even. And I measured my row count and my stitch count very carefully, both before and after soaking and blocking. I noticed that my row count between US size 6 and 7 was almost unchanged. I couldn't detect any real difference. But the stitch count was quite a bit different. So I went with the US size 6 and I knit the sweater in Bartlett Yarns Sport. This is a really great value of a yarn that comes, I forget, maybe 1,700 yards on a cone in the Mountain Laurel colorway. I had purchased this yarn at Rhinebeck and I was eager to begin knitting with it. The drape front sweater is knit flat in two pieces, and it's knit in such a way that you put a complete twist into the front of the sweater before seaming it, and that creates this very nice drape or twist in the front of the sweater. I found it rather easy to calculate the dimensions of the flat pieces that would be needed for my size, and I did alter them slightly from what the pattern suggested. I put a complete account of my knitting and adjustments that I made in my notes on Ravelry in case you're interested. One of the things that I planned to learn and improve as a skill, even with this simple sweater, was techniques for seaming, because the front and the back had to be seamed together, both at the shoulder seam and up the sides and under the arm. I blocked the pieces carefully before seaming, which was really essential because they just wanted to curl up on themselves quite a bit. So it was essential to soak them and then block them. And I even used a little bit of my steam iron to just smooth out the edges of those pieces before I started stitching them together. I found verypink.com's tutorials for mattress seaming by Stacy Perry. She is the genius behind verypink.com, and she has some excellent tutorials. So I watched the seaming tutorial, and it showed how to seam stockinette stitch. It also showed how to seam things when it wasn't just stockinette to stockinette. So that was very helpful. It took a long time for me to do my seaming, and I did have difficulty seeing. This isn't even a very dark yarn, but I was doing it at night. I was working at my dining room table, and I also put on my headlamp to work on the seaming, and that helped a lot. It helped me see all of the stitches very clearly, and it helped me figure out how to pull on my working yarn so that it was snug but not too tight and not bunching in any way. I really like this sweater. I think it looks very flattering. I received quite a few compliments on it by my colleagues who couldn't believe that it was something I had made myself. I think it looks sophisticated. It certainly doesn't have the look of a hand-knit sweater. It's great with jewelry. I was a little bit worried that the way the twist in the center pulled up, there's no waistline, there's no waist coverage to the sweater. And I was a little worried that that wouldn't look so great, but I wore a black tank underneath this sweater, and I just found the way it draws up in the center very flattering. I also like the way different stitch textures are exposed. The majority of the sweater is stockinette, but the left shoulder is reverse stockinette because you put this twist into the front piece before seaming it. Overall, I think this is a versatile sweater and a well-written, clear pattern that would be a good choice for a beginning knitter and in a variety of weights of yarn. It could work because you don't have to worry about patterns or cables lining up. You can just knit to your specified measurements and make it fit you perfectly. Once again, that is the Drape Front Sweater, a pattern by Roberta Rosenfeld. The Front Porch. I am so pleased to be part of the Soulful Stash Swap that is sponsored by Sarah of FiberTrek and Claire of the New Hampshire Knits podcast. And as I mentioned at the top of the episode, Pop Silly is my swap partner. While I was waiting to find out the identity of my swap partner, I started thinking about my own resources of Soulful Stash. Those of you who have been listening for a while know that I do not have a very large stash. I'm a relatively new knitter. I also have quite a small space devoted to crafty things in my home, and so I don't have large accumulations of things. In general, I don't have large accumulations of things, so not having a lot of stashed yarn is kind of in keeping with all of that. But I started thinking about, what do I have that's Soulful Stash? And then I started wanting to knit with it once I was taking things out in anticipation of more conversation and some additional purchases in the future. So I decided to knit with some Soulful Stash. I'm knitting the Ashburn. It's an asymmetrical shawl designed by Melanie Berg. And I am knitting it with two skeins of yarn I purchased at the Green Mountain Spinnery and one skein of Jacob fingering weight yarn from Ross Farm Fibers. And I purchased that at the Super Summer Knit Together last summer. The pattern is meant for three colors, and there's predominantly garter stitch with stripes of color and a little bit of a variation in textured stitching at different points in the shawl. It's a pleasure to knit, and it's been a pleasure to get to know these yarns a little bit by knitting with them. I've also alternated my needles a little bit to suit the yarn. So at first, when I pulled everything out, I mistakenly thought that these were all fingering weight yarns. But the first yarn I used was a DK. So I started the shawl on a US size 5, and I'm using for that Green Mountain Spinnery yarn. It's a DK weight, it's 50% wool, 50% Tencel, and it's a single. So, a DK weight single in a beautiful sky blue. Because of the wool and the Tencel taking the blue dye a bit differently, there's a little bit of heathering in that. And from there, I switched to a wool and mohair single weight yarn that is certainly a fingering weight. So, I just shifted my needles from size 5 to 5. To size 6 as I was knitting that portion of the shawl, and it looks fine. I think the bright yellow of the mohair, the yarn with mohair in it, and the blue of the yarn with the Tencel are kind of like sunshine and blue sky. And then the Ross Farm fibers, which will be the third yarn in the shawl. I have not started that. I'm just about to add the third color of yarn to the shawl. So that will be sort of like a gray atmosphere. So it's kind of an interesting combination of colors and textures. The Ross Farm yarn is Jacob, as I said, and it's a two-ply fingering weight. It's kind of a toothy, rustic yarn. And I'm really excited to knit with that. So that's what's been going on my needles since my last recording. And in terms of spindling, I've made an important acquisition. Actually, two acquisitions. It's not the norm for me. I found out that there would be an update of Jenkins Yarn Tools. And as you know, I am very fond of Turkish spindles by Ed Jenkins. These are just beautiful works of art, in addition to working very well as spindles. So, in the update a couple weeks ago, I acquired my first Küçülü. And this is a very tiny Turkish spindle. The one that I was able to acquire in this update is made of carob wood. It's only 7 grams. 0.24 ounces. So about a quarter of an ounce. Carob wood is a beautiful kind of reddish brown. This spindle spins just a little bit differently from my other Jenkins spindles because it's so small. It has a tendency to backspin very easily. This is reduced once there's a little bit of weight on it in terms of spun singles wound up on the base of the spindle, and then it seems to have a little bit less kickback. Because it's so delicate and tiny, it spins the most delicate yarn. So, when I two ply this yarn, which I intend to do, it will be a lace weight. And what I'm spinning on it, well, the first thing I spun on it and what you will see on the cover photo for this episode is a bamboo wool blend that was included in the packaging when Wanda Jenkins sent out the spindles. So this is a wonderful husband-wife team from Portland, Oregon, and Wanda packages the spindles very carefully so that they don't break in transit, and she always has yarn started, or I guess you could say fiber started, in the packaging. It's hooked to the shaft of the spindle, so you can start spinning on it right away and seeing what your new spindle is like. So I've spun the entire sample. It's a beautiful green color, like a mossy green color. And then I was thinking about what to put on the spindle next. And I decided to try for some batlings from Hobbledehoy in an update she was having the following weekend. And I was fortunate to be able to purchase some batlings in the folklore colorway. These are small pieces of blended top in a variety of colors, and the folklore colors are these wonderful, vibrant jewel tones. A lot of fun to spin on this tiny spindle. So I estimate that it will take maybe a year or more to spin 2.5 ounces on this teeny tiny spindle. And maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. Maybe it will go more quickly than I anticipate. I'm certainly not in a rush to complete this spinning project. Kuchulu is a Persian endearment, meaning cute or tiny or precious. That's how I feel about this spindle. Even before using it, just looking at it, it's just so tiny and exquisite that it's a joy to work with, as are all of the Jenkins products that I own. And it's such a pleasure, and I'm really looking forward to continuing work on this project. Off the Shelf. This is the final week of the read-along, the week during which we are reading the last two chapters of Housekeeping by Marilyn Robinson. That's according to the read-along schedule, but of course you are welcome to continue reading, even start reading. I know some folks were waiting for the book to turn up at their local library, and I will not be giving any spoilers or anything like that on the podcast, so you can join in at your own pace. There is amazing, rich, and thoughtful discussion happening on the discussion thread for this work on Ravelry. I am just so moved and so impressed every time I take a look at that thread and read the comments of listeners who are reading along with this work and really thinking about the contributions of others and responding to topics that are suggested. So I encourage you to join in, check it out, share something, share some thoughts that you have about the work. And in case you're wondering about the topics of discussion, so far there has been discussion about the presence of the lake. And I would even extend that as we read more deeply into the text, extend that discussion to a discussion of the theme of water in general In a previous episode, I talked about the fact that the genesis of this book was Marilyn Robinson's thinking about a variety of different kinds of metaphor. She had been sleuthing, I suppose, for metaphor in the American fiction reading she was doing, and that became the basis for this text. And there's a long tradition of water being a metaphorical representation for this idea of rebirth, renewal, that kind of thing. So maybe we could even extend our conversation into one about water and this notion of rebirth in general. We've also had lively discussion about the many references to textiles in this book. There were many, many, many in the opening chapters. Then it seemed to slow down a little bit, but I'm finding that in the closing chapters, this theme and these references to textiles returns. There's also been discussion of the author's perspective and the author's potential motivations for writing the work. There have been discussions of both beauty and brutality, or tragedy and loss, in the text. There have been some contributions about what is the pivotal point, or what is the point at which we as readers recognize that the work is now drawing to a close. There's been some discussion of scent imagery. I think that Marilyn Robinson is a master of pulling together all kinds of imagery. Often we think of imagery as something you see, but in the case of housekeeping, there are just multiple layers of imagery and different kinds of sensory experiences that are accessed through that imagery. So that's certainly worth talking about on the threads as well. And then today I'd like to give a little bit of attention to the concept conveyed by the title of the work. And that's always something to discuss or to turn over in your mind when reading a work of fiction, is what is the title and why do you think that's the title of the work? In this case, housekeeping, especially in the beginning of the work, it seems kind of like an odd choice because nothing is being kept. The house is being ravaged in a constant state of upheaval. There's a lot of death and departure, and so it seems kind of like an odd choice. And I don't necessarily think I have the answer or I understand completely why this work is called housekeeping. But I did discover in chapter 6 quite a long passage that at least addresses the title. And I've had a request to do, actually several requests, to do a little bit more reading on the podcast. And even though my voice today is not at its best, I am going to read quite a substantial passage and talk a little bit about my thoughts having to do with that passage. Before I begin reading Marilyn Robinson's work, I just want to read one small passage from Henry David Thoreau's Walden, because I feel certain that the beginning of this passage is a reference to Walden. And the Thoreau quote is, "I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when I came to die, discovered that I had not lived." So that's from Walden, and then here is from Housekeeping. This is chapter 6, and in the version that I have, it begins on page 99. "But I went to the woods for the woods' own sake, while increasingly Lucille seemed to be enduring a banishment there. When we did come home, Sylvie would certainly be home too, enjoying the evening, for so she described her habit of sitting in the dark. Evening was her special time of day. She gave the word three syllables, and indeed I think she liked it so well for its tendency to smooth, to soften. She seemed to dislike the disequilibrium of counterpoising a room full of light against a world full of darkness. Sylvie in a house was more or less like a mermaid in a ship's cabin. She preferred it sunk in the very element it was meant to exclude. We had crickets in the pantry, squirrels in the eaves, sparrows in the attic. Lucille and I stepped through the door from sheer night to sheer night. If the weather was cold, Sylvie always had a fire in the kitchen stove when we came home. She would switch on the radio and hum domestically while she heated our soup and toasted our sandwiches. It was pleasant when she scolded us for coming in late, for playing in our school clothes, for staying out in the cold without our coats on. One evening that summer, we came into the kitchen and Sylvie was sitting in the moonlight, waiting for us. The table was already set, and we could smell that bacon had already been fried. Sylvie went to the stove and began cracking eggs on the edge of the frying pan and dropping them shush into the fat. I knew what that silence meant, and so did Lucille. It meant that on an evening so calm, so iridescently blue, so full of the chink and chafe of insects and fat old dogs dragging their chains and belling the neighbors' dooryards, in such a boundless and luminous evening, we would feel our proximity with our finer senses. As, for example, one of two lying still in a dark room knows when the other is awake. We sat listening to the rasp of the knife as Sylvie buttered and stacked the toast, bumping our heels with a soft, slow rhythm against the legs of our chairs, staring through the warped and bubbled window at the brighter darkness. Then Lucille began to scratch fiercely at her arms and her knees. "I must have got into something," she said, and she stood up and pulled the chain of the overhead light. The window went black and the cluttered kitchen leaped, so it seemed, into being, as remote from what had gone before as this world from the primal darkness. We saw that we ate from plates that came in detergent boxes, and we drank from jelly glasses. Sylvie had put her mother's china in boxes and stacked them in the corner by the stove, in case, she said, we should ever need it. Lucille had startled us all, flooding the room so suddenly with light, exposing heaps of pots and dishes, the two cupboard doors which had come unhinged and were propped against the boxes of china. The tables and chairs and cupboards and doors had been painted a rich white, layer on layer, year after year, but now the last layer had ripened to the yellow of a turning cream. Everywhere the paint was chipped and marred. A great shadow of soot loomed up the wall and across the ceiling above the stove, and the stovepipe and the cupboard tops were thickly felted with dust. Most dispiriting, perhaps, was the curtain on Lucille's side of the table, which had been half consumed by fire once when a birthday cake had been set too close to it. Sylvie had beaten out the flames with a back issue of Good Housekeeping, but she had never replaced the curtain. It had been my birthday, and the cake was a surprise, as were the pink Orlin cardigan with the imitation seed pearls in the yoke, and the ceramic kangaroo with the air fern in its pouch. Sylvie's pleasure in this event had been intense, and perhaps the curtain reminded her of it. Wow, so to beat out the flames of an interior fire with a copy of Good Housekeeping is one of the It's one of the joyous ironies of this work for me. I can picture it happening. I can picture the interior of this house much more clearly in this passage than I had been able to in the past. So I think it's illuminating in that sense, but then it's just illuminating of Sylvie's character, that she would be beating out flames with a magazine that happened to be called Good Housekeeping. It's quite delightful. And I think this passage also marks, very clearly marks, a departure of the ways of Lucille from the ways of Sylvie. Sylvie's been maintaining this, you know, darkness inside, darkness outside equilibrium. And by standing up and pulling on the light, you can imagine the shock and the glare of, you know, an overhead kitchen lamp just suddenly turning on when you've been sitting in pitch blackness. So that's such a stark contrast, and I think that says all we really need to know about where Lucille is in this narrative and how she's coming into conflict with Sylvie's habits and her ideals. If you've been reading along with Housekeeping, or even if you've just begun, I hope that you will take the opportunity to check out the thread, read the comments of others, and share some insights of your own. I really look forward to hearing from listeners about this work and sharing insights, because I think everyone's input helps me understand the work a lot more deeply than I did upon my first read. I actually realized a few chapters into reading this book that I could not recall how it ended. So I think the images and the overall feeling of the work were much more powerful for me than any single element of plot. I think that's often the case with literary fiction. But this read is so much deeper and richer for me because I'm seeing it through the lens of so many other readers. And that's been very empowering. So thank you. Double Happiness. I am very thankful for a contribution of 2 skeins of yarn from Deb, who is Little Red Hen on Ravelry, and gave me these skeins in January as a potential podcast giveaway. Since they're both green, and there is very little green in the landscape I can see around Yinhu, I find myself longing for green and spring. So I've opened a contest thread on Ravelry to post something, anything green, for your chance to win one or both of these skeins of yarn. You can see all of the contest details on the thread, and I encourage you to take part. I've also included photographs of both skeins of yarn so you can see them. The second thing making me very happy this week is that some of the materials I ordered with my technology grant funds have come in. On Monday, I opened a big package from the Woolery with 3 of my students who have been in string theory, a little knit and crochet club that I've had going at school for a couple of years now. We take a bit of a hiatus during the months of January and February because I'm pretty busy with a couple other initiatives, and there are some Monday breaks. We tend to meet on Mondays that happen in January and February. And this year, every Monday that wasn't already a holiday, I think we had a snow day. So there were no Mondays to meet anyway, but now we're back in the swing of things and having regular Monday meetings. So these three young fiber artists helped me to unpack some supplies, and we talked about my initiative for next year and what I was hoping to do. I had brought along some fiber, and I just casually asked if anyone wanted to learn how to use the drop spindle. I made some rolags using a blending board that I had ordered, and in no time, all three of them were spinning, and they happily took their spindles with them when they left my office at the end of the meeting. And I can't wait for Monday to find out what they've been spinning, if they kept up with it, if they had any snags, and what their ideas are for curriculum for next year. My plan is to include the students in planning curriculum that is meaningful for them. And I will be doing this with two student groups because in the school district where I work, it's a two high school district. So I'll be working with two distinct sets of students to develop curriculum that may not be very similar. I don't know. Students in one building may decide to go in a completely different direction than the other, which is fine with me. I have only one rule or one non-negotiable, and that is that at some point during the experience, they need to make a contribution to a charity or some other group. And this could be by making something, like making chemo caps, for example, or making hats for Click for Babies, which has been our endeavor for the club the past couple of years. Or it could be making something that we would raffle off and use the money to make a contribution. It doesn't really matter to me what it is, but the curriculum must, in my opinion, include some sort of charitable contribution in some way. So I'm looking forward to developing that with them and receiving their input and working with them. They're just such a delight, and it's definitely a double happiness for this week. Well, I can tell that my voice is really beginning to falter, so I think it's time to say goodbye. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week. Bye-bye.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stone to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Kurtz sings, a bird out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. nature's herb will get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.